You're a little older and a lot wiser. The future is yours. Define aging on your own terms. Welcome to AARP Without Limits with your host, Mike Olander.
Hello and welcome. This is AARP Without Limits. We are disrupting aging one show at a time. All of our episodes are available anytime, on demand, at WPTF.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. I'm your host, Mike Olander. I'm the State Director of AARP North Carolina. Got a great show for you today, folks. Josh Dobson, who is the President and CEO of the North Carolina Healthcare Association, is with us to talk about healthcare in North Carolina, in particular, the role that hospitals play, and what's going on right now with respect to state and federal funding that could affect you and your family. But before we get to him, I want to have a little informal chit-chat, as always, as per the format of AARP Without Limits. However, today, Mike Davis, the person who I call the true talent of AARP Without Limits, is not with us. And if you listen to the show, you know that Mike recently retired from Curtis Media, though he's still active. He's working with this show and a couple of others just because of his commitment, which I think is wonderful. He's helping us out through the end of the year, and then we'll see where we are at that point. So, Mike, if you're listening, and I'm sure you will be listening because you will be editing this and putting it together post-production, hope you are doing well this week, my friend. Hope you're all doing well out there today, folks. Of course, this show is pre-recorded. It's a podcast. But I don't know when you'll be listening to this. It could be 5 days from right now. It could be a year from now. But right now, as I'm recording this, it is Thursday, September 4th. It's my mom's birthday. Mom, if you're listening, happy birthday. At this point, it's belated. happy birthday to you. I love you. And I'm looking forward to seeing you as soon as we can. We are in the period right now, folks, post-Labor Day, pre-official start of the fall season. Some call it the final throes of summer. I guess it's kind of like that. We are in the last couple of weeks, and it's been very mild as far as weather goes here, but it is. We are expected to get some warmer weather here in the coming days. I know y'all hear me talk about the weather and things like nonsense like this a bit too much on the show. It's not what you're here for. But it, you know, the time frames are important. They set reference points, and life does change from season to season, right? I began this year with certain expectations of how the year was going to go, in particular the summer. Summer for me and my kids is usually, you know, goes a certain way, at least in recent years, where we do road trips and we travel a lot, and you know, we do a lot of fun stuff. Not so much anymore. And those of you who are in your 50s, may with teenagers, you may know exactly what I'm saying here. And for those of you who are grandparents with teenage grandchildren, you may also know what I'm talking about here. You get to that certain point where, you know, the kids come home and they definitely don't want to be social. They don't want to sit out in the living room and watch TV with you. They just kind of want to go in their room and close the door and do their own thing. And with smartphones now, they're even more kind of on their own. They've got a lot more options, certainly more options than what I had when I was a kid, and that's a bit hard to relate to. One of the things that's most concerning, and I know y'all share this concern, is what does that do with the connectivity in between people? What does that do to our skill sets when we communicate with each other? One of the things that we learned from COVID as well, you know, we all went through a period of time of a couple of years where we were doing social distancing in one form or another, and we lost a lot. We lost a lot in different areas, in particular, soft skills, how we interact with each other, how we relate with each other. We ran into all sorts of things, I'd say, in our workforce, just having to suddenly deal with issues we didn't have to deal with before. People who, you know, worked together for a long time, not really getting along so much anymore. And how do we deal with that? But COVID is just, you know, was one experience. We have this era that we're in right now where we have smart technology. We've got social media. We have AI that is radically changing how we communicate and how we relate to each other. And that's something that really does concern me, as I'm sure it concerns you. But it also makes me very proud to work for AARP because we thrive on connectivity. We thrive on connecting people at the community level and in person. Y'all may not know this, but here, because AARP is such a large organization nationally, we've got 38 million members across the country. We've got 1.1 million members right here in North Carolina. And at the helm of AARP North Carolina, I've got a perspective that I think is pretty unique. And I am very, very proud of the work that we do. This year, we have conducted or will conduct what's on our calendar. We call it our tracker. Nearly 400 community events and activities going on all across the state. Last year, we did 475. We'll probably get close to that by the end of this year. Amazing work that's led by our outreach team of staff and volunteers all throughout the state. The vast majority of those 400-plus activities and events, folks, are conducted in person, including out in the mountain region, which, of course, was devastated by Hurricane Helene, and they're still recovering right now. Most of the activity that AARP is doing in the community is in person. And that is so, so important right now. And I think that's an important part of the quote-unquote value proposition that AARP offers as an organization to its members and also to volunteers and prospective volunteers. So if you're listening right now and you're interested in giving back in the community in some way, you know, maybe you've got a skill set that you'd like to dig back into. Maybe there's something you'd like to try for the first time. Maybe you just simply want to be around people who are roughly your age, who are interested in exercising your values and your sense of community and combining that with your skill set to help make an impact in the community. And it could be anything. It could be, you know, facilitating a workshop. It could be helping work the registration table at one of those events. It could be simply sitting at a table at a community fair, giving out information that is important to people as they age here in North Carolina. Send me an email, aarpwithoutlimits@aarp.org. That's the easiest way. And I'll connect you with our volunteers or staff members who can answer questions you may have about the volunteer experience at AARP. And give you an opportunity maybe that you don't have right now. And I know there's lots of places, a lot of people volunteer, you know, in the community at their church, or a community center, VFW hall, other organizations that have volunteer opportunities. One of the things about AARP that I'm very, very proud of is that our volunteer networks are like families. We look out for each other. We're involved in different things across the community. And we offer a lot of different types of opportunities for you to, again, use your skill set and also to learn. You know, we're never too old to learn. So again, AARP Without Limits at aarp.org. Be happy to check, to read your email, respond to it, and connect you with somebody who can tap you into some of AARP North Carolina's many, many activities and events going on across the state and in your community. Now, let me transition to our guest here and our topic for today. You know, there's a real strong connection between, you know, spirit, body, and soul, right? And with volunteering, that does something to your soul that gives you an opportunity to put others before yourself, to serve, not be served, as our founder said, and also I believe the Bible says as well. It does something to your soul. Very, very important to do that. And there is definitely a connection between the mind, body, and spirit. AARP takes care of a couple of those components. Our healthcare system is very, very complicated, and you know, your physical health, your physical well-being, in a large part, relies on your access to affordable, quality healthcare in your community. And there's a lot going on right now. We know there's the federal legislation, you know, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, OBA. There's state funding issues going on that were really not foreseen, you know, just a year or two ago, that are now having an impact on healthcare reimbursement rates and things like that, which could affect you and your family. And we need to start making some sense of this, right? Because most of us don't follow this on a daily basis. And so I'm very happy to have with us on the show for the very first time, Josh Dobson. He is the president and CEO of the North Carolina Healthcare Association. Josh, welcome to the show.
You bet, Mike. Glad to be with you.
So let's begin with some basics, if we could, Josh, just for those of us who don't know, what is the North Carolina Healthcare Association? Who makes up the association, and what exactly does your organization do?
Sure. Thank you. Thank you for the question, and a great honor to be with you today. Basically, we have 135 hospitals or members across the state that are part of our organization, and we are a trade organization that advocates at the local, state, and federal level on behalf of hospitals across the state of North Carolina. In addition to that, we have two other pieces to our organization, something called Strategic Partners, which is the for-profit part of NCHA that works kind of as a liaison between businesses and our members. And then we have a foundation that does great work around Medicaid and the most vulnerable. But the primary purpose and the primary objective of the North Carolina Healthcare Association is to be an advocate for 135 hospitals across the state of North Carolina at all levels of government.
Now, the United States has a very complicated healthcare system, and it's very easy for people to misunderstand it. I'm sure you encounter that quite a bit in your work. If you could please take a moment to share, what is your take on the important role that hospitals play as part of our healthcare system in our state, across the board, rural and urban communities?
Sure. On a personal note, coming from a rural area from my days in the State House of Representatives, we struggled in a lot of ways, but what we had that was good was good public education and good health care and good hospitals. So I say that to say in these communities, particularly in rural areas of our state, a hospital is not just a place to go when you get sick. It's an economic anchor for communities across North Carolina. When challenges are in a community, the hospital is the first place that they go to raise money. So it's more than just a place to go when you get sick in areas across our state. In addition to that, a lot of people don't know the economic benefits beyond that across the state, not just in rural areas. For instance, over 270,000 direct jobs are accounted for because of hospitals in our state, because of our members. We paid over $2.5 billion. Our members and our employees paid over $2.5 billion in state and local taxes in previous years. We contributed over $100 million to North Carolina's general fund through the taxes and assessments that we pay. I could go on and on. I just want to make the point that the economic engine that hospitals are for rural areas, but across our state, plays a vital role in the success of the state that we have. There's a reason we're the ninth largest state, one of the fastest growing, number one ranked by CNBC for the economy and business. And a lot of people want to take credit for that, but hospitals play a role in that, a significant role in why we are doing so well in North Carolina. So I say all that to say it's not just a place we go when we get sick. It's an economic engine to those communities in which our hospitals serve, in which our members serve.
Now, one of the things that I encounter a lot, AARP encounters a lot in our work, sometimes it's surprising to see how little our elected officials or the public understand certain basic issues or how certain systems work. With a very complicated healthcare system, I'm sure you encounter that every day. In your opinion, what are some of the things that you think the public or elected officials consistently misunderstand about the role that hospitals play in our healthcare system?
Yeah, so I would start by saying there's a false narrative that all hospitals across the state of North Carolina are just flush with cash and a strong balance sheet. And that's just inaccurate. Obviously, some are doing well, but many of our hospitals across the state are on a 1-2% margin, 3% if they're lucky, from year to year. And I just want to reiterate, and I tell all of my friends in elected office and in policymakers and to the general public that you change a policy by a small amount or you reduce rates across the board in North Carolina, that's going to have an impact because there is a false narrative that all of our hospitals are flush with cash, and that's just not the case. Many of them are on a small margin, and the policy choices and the budget choices that our elected officials make, both at the state and federal level, matter, and it's going to have an impact in those communities. So I'm just trying to get that message out there that I think gets lost sometimes in translation, the struggles that hospitals actually do have that's real, that's not fictitious, but is very real.
Wow. That's an important point. And I appreciate you sharing it because I see that too in the work AARP does, because sometimes some of the proposals include, you know, ideas that say, well, just let the providers take the hit to save the consumers the money. And on one hand, you say, yeah, of course, we want to protect patients and consumers. But at the same time, like you said, there's this misunderstanding that these hospital healthcare systems are, you know, have huge margins and can absorb it without affecting their operations. And in many cases, you actually see healthcare systems go out of business because that's just simply not the case with many of them. So I appreciate you sharing that. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Josh Dobson. This is AARP Without Limits. We'll be right back.
AARP is working hard to make sure people in North Carolina are getting the most out of life. Whether it's helping you stay healthy, save more money, care for loved ones, or simply have some fun, AARP is making a difference in communities across the state. You have a wise friend and fierce defender with AARP. Learn more about progress being made for older adults in the state by listening to AARP Without Limits. You can find the latest episodes of AARP Without Limits wherever you listen to your podcasts.
And we are back. This is AARP Without Limits. Just a reminder, folks, we always love to hear from you if you have a question, a comment, a recommendation, or a suggestion for a future guest or topic. Please send me an email. I say it all the time. I love to get email from you guys. AARP Without Limits at AARP.org. I will take your recommendations seriously, and we'll get back to you for sure. We've been speaking today with Josh Dobson. He's the president and CEO of the North Carolina Healthcare Association. And so far, we've just been touching on the basics about what the association is and a bit about how our hospitals play an important role in our healthcare system and local economies and the state economy. Josh, let's talk a little bit, if we could, about what's going on, some of the big challenges that I know is front and center for you and your team right now. The North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services recently announced a mandatory reduction in Medicaid reimbursement rates starting October 1st. Due to a shortage of state funds and some anticipated cuts coming from the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. I know a lot's being sorted out and figured, and there's still some big unknowns out there, but how is this expected to impact hospitals and providers across the state as you see it right now?
Yeah, great question. I think the first thing is for the general public to kind of understand why the department is proposing these significant cuts. The one bill, what I call HR 1, what some call One Big Beautiful Bill, I call it HR 1. That was responsible for North Carolina a minimum of $32 billion in cuts over a 10-year period. Just in North Carolina. Across the country, Medicaid will be cut by $1 trillion over a 10-year period. So that in itself is a significant challenge that our members, all providers, not just hospitals, but all providers across North Carolina and across the country are going to be forced to deal with. That is a separate cut, a separate issue from what the department is proposing right now. Every year, and I know you know this, Mike, but every year we have something in, within Medicaid called the rebase. And essentially what that is a projection of what Medicaid reimbursement is going to cost the state for the year in question. And there is a difference between what the additional funds that are going to be needed from for Medicaid between the department and the General Assembly. The General Assembly appropriated, I think, $500 million in additional money, $600 million thereabouts, and the department said they need $900 million to meet the demands of Medicaid for the new year. So they took it upon themselves to say, okay, you did not give us the money that we need, therefore we're going to start cutting rates to make sure that we balance the Medicaid budget in North Carolina. That's unfortunate. I wish the department would have not taken that unilateral step so quickly. What's happened in the past, if we get to the end of the fiscal year or close to the end of the fiscal year, the General Assembly and the department can work it out and appropriate more money that's needed for the Medicaid program. So it's unfortunate, and I wish the department would have not chosen to go down this road, because it's going to be a significant hit, perhaps unnecessarily, on providers and on hospitals across the state. So we are working with the department to get them, or ask them to at least to delay those cuts until January, to see if the department, see if the General Assembly can come back and appropriate more money to get to a more appropriate number for what we call the rebase or the Medicaid budget. So it's an unfortunate. I don't think it was the right approach for the department to take, but we're working with them, and hopefully we can get this resolved.
Just a quick follow up on that, Josh, regarding the Medicaid expansion, as described the Medicaid rebase. What's the relationship between that, the Medicaid rebase, and, just so our listeners understand, and the cost to the Medicaid expansion in terms of what the federal government plays? Is there a relationship, or are they completely separate?
Yeah, thank you for the question. And I think this gets lost somewhere in conversation. The state of North Carolina, the way we structured our Medicaid expansion program, does not pay $1 of Medicaid funds for the expansion population. 90% of those funds come from the federal government. And 10% for the Medicaid expansion population is actually paid for by the hospitals through something called an assessment. So essentially, hospitals across North Carolina are paying North Carolina's share of what's responsible for Medicaid expansion. So the two are not tied together. It's really two separate issues that we're dealing with, because the state is not responsible for the Medicaid expansion population dollars.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that for folks, because I know we hear a lot of confusion on that too from the public. Speaking of Medicaid expansion, if you could, in your view, what are there structural or financial challenges that are out there that make expansion difficult to sustain over the long term? Could we see, I know there's been talk, and I know it's every day with the federal government, it seems like there's a new development or a new announcement being made. But what's your take in terms of the long-term viability of Medicaid expansion? Are you guys kind of preparing for a change in the terms with the federal government, or do you think that we're likely to remain on the same track that we are right now?
Well, if things stay as they are, I'm optimistic that the 650,000 people in North Carolina whose lives got better because of Medicaid expansion will continue to receive that health care. But it's under threat, no question about it. And it's not really, I would say, this is just my opinion, it's not a financial or a budget problem, it's a political problem. There are those who believe that Medicaid expansion is a wrong policy choice at the federal level. When I was in elected office, and absolutely now, I believe it was the right policy choice to make the lives of North Carolinians better. So there are proposals in Congress right now, and there were proposals under H.R. 1 that fortunately was left out of H.R. 1 to to roll back Medicaid expansion, not just for North Carolina, but across the country. So it's a real threat. We do not know what the future looks like. I've been tasked by my board and by my members, to do all we can to preserve and protect Medicaid expansion in North Carolina. But that will be a federal Congress. Congress will make that decision, but we are working closely with our delegation to make sure that doesn't happen. But no question about it, it's under threat.
Well, we're right there with you. And just so folks know, AARP North Carolina also did support the Medicaid expansion. And we think it's been very, very important, especially for those who are aged 50 to 64 who had previously been priced out and didn't qualify for the assistance under the exchange system. So hopefully, Josh, being that here in our state, it was so bipartisan with Governor Cooper then at the time and obviously a very strong Republican controlled legislature coming under the same page and passing it. Hopefully that will have some weight from our congressional representation here as that is discussed in Washington. Let's switch gears a little bit from your vantage point. What policy changes or legislative actions do you think are most urgently needed right now to ensure that hospitals can continue to provide affordable, high quality, accessible care?
Yeah, great question, Mike, and I appreciate it. I would start by saying do no more harm. And that's for both the state and federal level. H.R. 1, as I said, is a Medicaid cut across the country of $1 trillion. And it's going to hurt, and there's going to be an impact, and the citizens of North Carolina are going to suffer because of that. So that's one thing. We can't take any more harm. Obviously, we just talked about what the department is proposing to cut Medicaid reimbursement rates unilaterally. That's going to be harmful. And we also know that the state health plan under the state treasurer's office is getting ready to implement significant cuts to providers and to hospitals across North Carolina. So that's three huge hits that hospitals are going to be taking that are going to have an impact in communities across North Carolina. So my first thing would be do no harm. Please do not do anything that makes it harder for hospitals to operate in North Carolina. The second thing I would say, there are policy choices that I think could be made around prior authorization to make it easier to allow patients to get the care that they need without the regulatory burden and the undue burden and administrative cost put on hospitals. So I would encourage the General Assembly to take a look at something called prior authorization. And I would start with that. So those would be the two that I say. Do no harm. Look at restructuring prior authorization so that the administrative burden on hospitals could be reduced.
One last big question for you, Josh. One challenge that's been here in North Carolina for a while has been the healthcare workforce shortage. How do hospitals deal with this, given that they are so important in so many communities? And what are you expecting right now, given the landscape of things in the coming years? Are we going to continue to have a big shortage? Are you encouraged by any movement that may be taking place that's going on here in the state that could help address this long term?
A couple things. One, I, on a positive note, there does seem to be a bipartisan focus on workforce development. Both Governor Stein, Senator Berger, Speaker Destin Hall, as well, have made a commitment to address the workforce shortage in North Carolina. So long term, I'm optimistic that we can get there. But in the short term, despite all the challenges that my members are facing, workforce is always at the top of that list on two levels. One, finding the clinicians, the nurses, the doctors that are needed to do the work, but also the labor costs. Costs just keep going up for labor. So that continues to be a challenge. Many of our hospitals are using contract nurses to try to fill that void. Bonuses, all options are on the table for my members when it comes to addressing the workforce challenge. So short term, it's going to be a challenge for a while, but long term, I'm more optimistic that that we can resolve it. And we're already seeing the contract nurses decrease, which I think is a good thing for our members. So we're addressing it in a lot of ways. And hopefully we can continue to move in a positive direction. But I think it's important to say it's not just healthcare. As you know, it's across the board. When I was commissioner of labor for 4 years, basically I was asked, what are you doing to address the labor challenges in North Carolina? So we are working with our community colleges. We are working with different chambers of commerce to be creative in how we address this challenge. But no question about it, it's a challenge.
For those who are listening, who are interested in learning more, they want to, take a deeper dive into some of these issues they touched on. What would you recommend, Josh, as far as resources online or your social media for the association?
We do have a LinkedIn page. We have a Twitter page. So I would encourage everyone to go there. You can also find it at www.ncha.org. That's our website where you can find numerous resources to inform yourself on some of the challenges that healthcare providers are facing in North Carolina. Again, that's ncha.org. I would encourage your listeners to go there and take a look at that. And you can also find us on social media if you just type in North Carolina Healthcare Association.
Great. Josh, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate the conversation with you today.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me, Mike, and thank you for the work that you guys do.
Thank you. Well, that is a wrap, folks. I want to say thank you to Josh Dobson for being our guest. Thank you to Mike Davis for post-production. And of course, thank you for listening. This has been AARP Without Limits. I'm Mike Olander with AARP North Carolina. We'll see you next time.